This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday, Matt and Patrick. Patrick, I am screaming on the inside. I went for a bike ride today. I got 13 and a half miles in, which, you know, yeah, that it's not, I haven't done that in a while. Went from Hopkins up to Cedar Lake. And yeah, ow. Every muscle. And my elbow hurts really bad too. And I found some more problems on my, it's just why, you know, the problem with exercising is you find out especially if you're taking time off, you're really bad at it. And then B, like the equipment you use, you know what? I wouldn't know that my chain on my bike is a little loose if I didn't go biking. So you know what? Maybe I'll just leave it out there and, you know, needless to say, it was lovely. I had a fun moment twice where it was like a high speed game of Tetris where I'm biking down the bike lane and there's ice there, but there's this tire size width of cleared area. So all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, I'm testing after every muscle in my body is shaking, I gotta test my balance skills and see if I can get it down there. I did not die. I did make it through there.
Well, good to hear because you're here today. So that obviously means you made it through.
Well, made it through is an objective decision. I mean, really, I mean, it's, I am not going to be up tomorrow. I'll sleep in. I'm not going to take the day. I'll be here to do this show. Have you gone outside at all?
I did. I got out for a walk kind of in a small downtown area. You know, one of my favorite things, it's kind of tough to describe and like there's no word for it, but you know, you walk past like an old coffee shop that's in like an old building.
Yeah.
And you know, there's that very strong smell of coffee mixed with old building and probably some of the baked goods. And it's like, I love that smell.
I'm hoping as far as deliciousness goes, it's either baked goods or coffee prior to old building. Because I can't believe that would be the tasty smell. I know what you're talking about. I mean, when Butler Square, when they opened up Butler Square and they did the feeling of that building, the smell, everything like that was great. It's better than what happened over the U, including to my son Charlie, who's over at the University of Minnesota, where they had to evacuate four of the major student halls over there because of what they thought was a gas smell initially, but then it's just a backed up sewer.
Oh boy.
Yeah. And so they got that taken care of, but needless to say, just delightful. And 5 hours. Charlie said they had to evacuate for 5 hours, and Charlie is a pretty good student, you know, hey, didn't get that from me. But he's a pretty good student, but needless to say, I mean, he was miffed because that was like, I was planning on doing some serious studying. He's like, well, where'd you put you? Well, we were all hanging out outside. Oh, okay. And it was nice weather. Right? Hanging out outside. I see what happened. Hello, college ladies. Now, he's smart enough not to say it. Hello, college ladies, you know, at his age, but you know, you got the point. 952-946-6205. Yesterday, we had a discussion about Sam and I were talking about the royal interview, the Oprah interview with Harry and Meghan. And did you catch any of that, Patrick? You watch any of that?
I did not watch any of that.
It's worth watching because, frankly, I think it's 100% true. I'm going to just be blunt. I think it's 100% true. I said yesterday to Sam, these are people that like to think of themselves as some sort of more genetically superior human. And so, I mean, everything that they're saying does kind of, you know, echo that. It was interesting because Meghan and Harry never said which royal family member was concerned about the color of their babies. But funny story, Prince Charles was out today in the black community of London saying hello to the black community. So as a lot of people kind of speculated, it's like, I wonder if that was kind of an admission by him. Needless to say, and then, of course, you have the Piers Morgan, who got called out on his own show by a co-host about how basically he got cut off from Meghan Markle as far as getting access. And so he's had a vendetta ever since. And he got called out on that. Now he's not even coming back to his show. But needless to say, this is something – this was foreseeable. And if you want just proof of this, here is a clip. This is John Oliver on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert from 2 years ago. Back when they used to have audiences, they used to actually do face-to-face interviews. This is from in 2018, actually like 2.5 years ago, right before the Harry and Meghan wedding.
Well, speaking of royal wedding, I mean, you're English. You must be really excited about the royal wedding.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't
really.
You gotta be.
Really?
Look, he's a Brit. He's marrying an American girl. You're British. You married an American woman. You got any tips for him?
I would not blame her if she pulled out of this at the last minute. I don't think you need to have just seen the pilot episode of The Crown to get a basic sense of she might be marrying into a family that could cause her some emotional complications.
But this generation seems like nice people, right? They're all nice now, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're an emotionally stunted group of fundamentally flawed people doing a very silly pseudo job. That's what she's marrying into. So I hope she likes it. It's going to be weird for her. I would not marry into the royal family. I'm a commoner. I would not be welcome, especially after what I've just said. I'm guessing the Queen is probably...
Could you get a knighthood?
Theoretically, I could.
Yeah?
She's probably ripping that up as we speak. There we go. Insolent little bastard, you're not coming now, are you?
If you see performers or comedians or something, if you see them get a knighthood, mm-hmm. do you go, what the f- are you doing?
Accepting it?
Yeah, if you see other people who satirize power and
it's a little bit, it's just weird to kneel in front of another adult. It's odd. I know that, like, historically you read and you see people kneeling down and kissing the ring.
Yeah.
It's a bit strange. It's an odd thing to still have. And I like royal weddings as much as I like any. I also like fireworks. You know, it's a spectacle. It's something nice to look at.
Put them both together.
But, well, that could be the most Guy Fawkes-based idea you've ever...
there you go. John Oliver calling it 2.5 years ago. This is a weird family doing a weird thing that's not very accepting of commoners. And Meghan Markle, they were just, you know, I think that there was just a misunderstanding of what she was marrying into. And I feel sorry for her because, you know, you find true love, and it does seem like Harry and her do really love each other. But that is a clown car of a family. And like I said, I've lived over in Europe for 3 years when I was in the military, and you just kind of see how, you know, I traveled to England multiple times when I was in, you know, and I was there, and you'd read the tabloids and just realize what a circus that whole thing is. It makes celebrity. You know, we have, how many celebrities do we have in this country where it's an up-and-coming star? You know, a kid, you know, goes out there, makes a few good movies, and then just kind of falls off the radar, whether it's just the mental stress of trying to be successful, the crippling, suffocating nature of celebrity in America. No matter what it is, it just, people get into drugs, they get in this, and they fall off the cliff. And it's happened. Britney Spears it happened to. Shia LaBeouf it's happened to. It's Demi Lovato. I mean, it just, celebrity is a real two-edged sword here. You know, you can kind of get it on both sides. Celebrity in this country is nothing compared to the monarchy. And, you know, these are people that if you have a, what kind of jam you have on your morning crumpet is going to get written. It's going to get written up in a paper with some kind of weird headline, you know, Megan Gaga for apricot. You know, that is what these people do. And it chews people up. And the people that are in the monarchy, the people that are royalty, they are born and bred into that system. And so it is, I mean, Princess Diana had a brutal time with that as a commoner coming in. You know, and you look at Meghan Markle. I mean, it's just you can think anything you like in regards to what you're prepared for. The reality is these people are, you know, it's a different world. And once again, John Oliver, well done there on calling on that. I'll tell you what we'll do. Let's take a first break early here. When I come on back, let's give an update on the Derek Chauvin trial. They have actually two jurors seated, and I'm already concerned about what is going to happen here. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Jury selection began today on Derek Chauvin's murder trial with two jurors seated and five others dismissed while appellate issues in the case still loom. Proceedings in Hennepin County District Court began about 8 a.m. with the sorting of more legal issues in connection to the trial of the fired police officer charged with pinning George Floyd by the neck to the pavement in the South Minneapolis street corner, killing him. Judge Cahill reminded the attorneys early on, the jury anonymity is a high priority for him, and that some questions from the lawyers about employment left enough clues to put revealing identity at risk. Defense attorney Eric Nelson hit established themes in much of his questioning, among them how to figure out who is right in a conflict between two people's versions of events. Now, mind you, we know about this because of the video evidence. And yet here we are. It is just the legal system in this country is so damn broken. And it really is, because I mean, and I understand everyone's, you know, you're entitled to a trial, but dear Lord, you did this on tape. You killed the man on tape. You murdered the man. You murdered the man on tape, for God's sakes. And so I have zero tolerance for this. Yeah, well, okay, what about our version of events? You put your knee... What? Anyway. Also, whether it's people of color can be treated unfairly in American justice system and one's ability to change an opinion based on facts. He also probed Woodby Jr. about the widely viewed witness video that showed Chauvin detaining Floyd on the pavement roughly 9 minutes and how it might weigh on their ability to be impartial when hearing all the evidence. Of the first seven people questioned, five said they had negative impression of Chauvin to some degree because of the video. All right. The first seated juror, a white man, was selected after being questioned at length by Nelson and for a few minutes by the prosecution. He revealed that he is a chemist who lives in Minneapolis, and because of his profession, I consider myself a pretty logical person. I rely on facts and logic, and that's in front of me. Opinion and facts are important distinctions for me. He said he has a generally favorable view of the Black Lives Matter cause, but added that I think all lives matter equally and that the Blue Lives Matter message among police advocates is a counter viewpoint that isn't necessary. He said he has not viewed the video of Floyd's death. After checking with the defense and prosecution, Cahill told the jury to report back to court on March 29th and be prepared for the proceedings to last about 2 weeks. The second-seated juror, a woman originally from northern Minnesota, told Nelson she was super excited to receive her jury summons because she realizes it's her civic duty. She said she was eager to serve regardless of the case, but especially in the Chauvin's trial, given the gravity of it. It's a very important case, not just for Hennepin County, but nationwide. She said, it's just something everybody heard about, talked about. No matter the decision, people are still going to be talking about it. Like many of the others before her, she said that viewing of Floyd's video of Floyd's arrest left her with a somewhat negative impression of Mr. Chauvin. No one wants to see someone die. The woman also said she sees racial disparity in the justice system in connection with the belief she added there. She agrees somewhat that Minneapolis police officers at times use too much force against black suspects, and she has heard these experiences from people she knows. At the same time, she considers herself a go-with-the-flow type and assured both Nelson and assistant prosecutor Steve Schleicher, S-C-H-L-E-I-C-H-E-R, Schleicher, that she can be open-minded about the evidence presented at trial. The woman, the niece of a Brainerd police officer, was then seated. Much of Monday court time was spent on Judge Cahill hearing from the attorneys about whether a third-degree murder count needs to be reinstated before the lawyers start screening potential jurors before the global television audience. Nelson spent much of his time questioning the first potential juror, a married mother of three from Mexico, about the witness video that showed Chauvin pressing his knee into Floyd's neck. The woman acknowledged that when she first saw the video, she recalled Floyd saying, "I can't breathe," and thinking at that moment, "He can't do that. Hey, don't do that, or he's going to die. I feel that's not fair. We are humans." Nelson asked the woman whether she could change her mind about that video upon hearing the evidence during the trial. Okay, once again. What are you going to argue is the counterpoint in that video? It wasn't you. Okay. It'd be one thing if a police officer... Let's take the Capitol Police, okay? Let's take a Capitol Police. The Capitol Police were at one of the doors, and as they realize they're being overwhelmed, one of them flails uncontrollably and catches one of the protesters, terrorist protesters, in the throat and, you know, basically causes enough damage that that person dies. Okay, that did not happen here. The officers are holding the man down for 9 freaking minutes. And it was clear. I mean, at what point do you say, okay, it's 3 minutes in, he's not moving. When do you check pulses? When do you check to see if he's breathing? And it should be reminded too, I do believe, weren't there quite a few lies being told by officers in the 12 hours or so after that incident? About what really did happen? For goodness sakes. I thought that was the case. I'll have to go back and check that. I'm pretty sure that was the case. And Nelson asked the woman whether she could change her mind about the video upon hearing all the evidence during the trial. She responded that she could. However, Nelson did point out that she answered on her questionnaire before reporting Tuesday that she wanted to be on the jury because it would be like, I would like to give my opinion on the unjust death of George Floyd. Well... that's called reality. You asked, she answered. Nearly an hour into the selection, Cahill told the first potential juror to be questioned that she was dismissed afterwards. He told the attorneys that he received a text from a retired judge indicating he would see the potential juror's reflection in the plexiglass. He said the issue would be resolved over the lunch break. The third possible juror didn't last long, being excused by the judge after she said under oath that I think I could try to be impartial. I don't know that I could promise to be impartial. Well, this is what happens when you murder a black man on camera. You know, it's a tough thing. I understand seating this trial, but I think that at the same time, I'm a little concerned about whether or not you're going to be able to. The reasonable expectation is people, what are you going to say? I mean, I do have to ask, Chauvin, why aren't you just taking a plea deal at this point? I don't know. Also, I should mention this. Judge Peter Cahill said he was not convinced by a motion filed by Derek Chauvin's defense attorney to potentially reserve his prior decision to use evidence from George Floyd's 2019 arrest. Monday marked the first day of jury selection in the murder trial. Actually, it was today. Yesterday was a off day. In the afternoon session yesterday, Chauvin's defense attorney, Eric Nelson, asked the judge to reconsider allowing evidence from Floyd's prior arrest. Nelson said the defense found meth and fentanyl pills in the back of the police car Floyd's deadly arrest took place in and around. The defense brought up the 2019 arrest and argue the pills suggest a modus operandi for Floyd ingesting narcotics during an arrest. In response, Case said he didn't see how it fit as Chauvin was not part of that 2019 arrest. To be honest, I'm not convinced, Cahill told the defense that Nelson outlined his argument. Floyd's sister left the courtroom for about 2 minutes, although it's clear what she was done in defiance or just to take a break. The judge adjourned court for the day before 3 o'clock yesterday. Now, the character assassination. Now, usually, let's make sure we go through the usual timeline of Minneapolis police, wrongful deaths, what happens. Usually, it's almost immediately the union head, until recently Bob Kroll, Delmonico before that, would come on out there and character assassinate the individual who had died. Jamar Clark, Betsy Hodges. I mean, the entire Pointergate was a character assassination, for God's sakes. But they realized very quickly. They tried to put out some to test the waters. Could we do a character assassination of George Floyd? And there were some things that were said, like in the Bob Kroll letter, as well as also some things that were alluded to occasionally by Chauvin's defenders. But the reality was, is they realized if they went on a character assassination of George Floyd, a guy who was being carried, his image was being carried not only everywhere in the city, not only everywhere in this country, but worldwide, that they would be the most despised law enforcement agency in decades in this country. Not since the civil rights, police crackdowns of the 1960s, would we have such a hated and despised police force as the Minneapolis police force. So they realized they couldn't, but you get ready for it, because it's going to be character assassination after character assassination after character assassination. Because they have to basically try to convince the jury that he was a bad guy. So Derek Chauvin, because the video is going to come in. So he's a bad guy. So Derek Chauvin, being the judge, jury, and executioner, had to happen, because that's, I guess, and he's going to have to make up laws and rules. And there's drug dealers, and he was killing 12-year-old girls, and he was all that. That's what they're going to be saying, because they have to convince people that that officer was right in murdering George Floyd on camera. And I have zero freaking patience for it. I have zero patience for the entire system right now, from the politicians, the Republican politicians, who basically sit there and try to keep this system in place, to the police officers who, in Minneapolis at least, still could not go on out there and criticize an officer who murdered a man on camera, to the prosecutors who have time and time again, whether intentionally or unintentionally, screwed up legal cases to where there has been no real justice for these people. You know, the main goal is to character assassination and then basically stash as much of their money as possible so that a civil trial gets sense. Here's $20. That's all you're getting from me. That's the system we have in place. And by the way, I got a story here coming up from South Dakota, which makes this entire thing just the most the legal system in this country is so freaking broken. And I've got zero patience for it. You know, I don't need lawyers telling me the sun is the moon. I don't need that. You're insulting my intelligence, and you're making such a preposterous argument that there's no way on the planet. And I understand, defendants are entitled to a defense. But this is just such a travesty. This whole thing was the murder of George Floyd was just such a travesty, and now we get to go through the three-ring circus. Gary is in Minneapolis. Let's get Gary on in here before we go to the break. Welcome on in, Gary.
I just want to add something, Matt. That whole thing is so petty, a $20 bill. He probably didn't even know what it was counterfeit. That happened to me. Maybe I didn't get the cops calling me because I'm white. But anyways, why would the cops even bother on that?
I wanted to let you know, Gary, I'm glad you brought that up. Thanks, Gary. That happened to me once, too. I was in a bar. I had a 50. I bought some drinks. I ended up getting like $30 back. One of the bills I got was a counterfeit bill. And I just gave the 20 and the next thing. And the guy's like, oh, funny story. Give me the real money. It's like, no, that's the money you guys gave me. And, I had that happen, too. No, you don't. I know Republicans are going to go out there and try to make an argument. I know Bob Kroll type police officers will go try to make an argument that there's some sort of justification here. To my knowledge here, even if every crime you've accused this man of doing was true, which right now you don't have buckus on that, okay? Everything you're accusing this guy of is being true. None of them are a death sentence, for God's sakes. We do not have the death penalty in Minnesota. And so, yeah, I am more bothered. Remember, we were talking about this over the political season about whether or not Trump would step aside and allow, Biden to take over, which, spoiler alert, didn't go nearly as smoothly that it should have. But I got to tell you the truth, I am far more bothered by the hijinks and the shenanigans and what's going on with this trial, because for God's sakes, this town needs some level of justice here. And, George Floyd's family deserves some level of justice here. And right now, I'm just, any kind of hiccup, I am quite bothered by. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. You're more than welcome to call in and give us your opinion on this if you'd like. Like I said, I'll come on back. When I do come on back, I'll share the delightful story of what's happened with the Attorney General in South Dakota. That's coming on up. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. It's gonna be kind of right tonight. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. The South Dakota House of Representatives voted on Monday to halt impeachment proceedings against the state attorney general over his conduct in a fatal car crash last year. While he still faces unresolved criminal charges from the accident, the lawmakers voted 57-11 to suspend further impeachment action against the state's top law enforcement official, Republican Jason Ravensburg. The move marks a sharp turnaround after both Democrat and Republican politicians had called for his ousting. The clamor reached its peak last month after state authorities took the evidentiary step of releasing video of police interrogations of the attorney general and other evidence from the September 12th crash in which his car struck and killed a man walking along the highway. In the video, Ravensburg told police he believed he had run into a deer rather than a person until he returned to the scene the following day to find the body of the victim, 55-year-old Joe Bover, lying in the roadside ditch. Investigators suggested Ravensburg's account lacked credibility, telling him under questioning that a broken pair of eyeglasses belonging to Bover were found in his car, indicating the victim's face had gone through the windshield on impact. Police also told Ravensburg that Bover had been carrying a flashlight, which was still illuminated when they found it on the next day, that the evidence showed Ravensburg had driven into the shoulder of the road where the victim was walking. The video sparked immediate outrage. So, let's make sure we understand this. On freaking September 12th, this guy kills a man with his car. And he does. That's what happened. He killed a man with his car. He was apparently watching some sort of video or checking out some sort of meme on his phone. So he wasn't paying. So it was reckless. He was out in the middle of nowhere, South Dakota. And that's why the flashlight is important. Is that he claims he didn't see anything, but there was a flashlight out there that would have been a light source. He clearly had to have seen that. Plus, there's a little problem of this individual's eyeglasses having gone through the windshield with the victim's face, and the eyeglasses ended up in his car. And Ravensburg has been clearly lying about a lot of this stuff because when he's been confronted, he's just shrugged his shoulders. He's the attorney general of the state of South Dakota. I don't know how to go there. He kills the guy on the 12th. They don't even say they're going to charge him with, I mean, he got what, misdemeanors charges against him. And now the attempt to even impeach him has been derailed because we need to understand and accept something which is just a god-awful reality about the world we live in right now, is that he was, because the Republicans control so much of the government in South Dakota, he was found innocent because he's Republican. That's it. That's it. If he was Black or Native American, he'd already be in jail. Heck, he'd probably already be on death row. I don't know. Do they have the death penalty in South Dakota? I mean, they might. If he was a Democratic attorney general, do you think if he was the Democratic attorney general that the Republican House would have stopped? Oh, well, let's get this criminal stuff figured out first, and then we'll figure out whether or not he needs to be impeached. Oh, please. They would have if this was a Democrat, by the 15th of September, they would have been impeached. But this is the problem with the Republican Party today, is that you get the guy in North Dakota who was just thrown out of their house up there, who is one of the most sick misogynists you've ever heard. Donald Trump instigates a mob to violate the U.S. Capitol building. We got plenty of evidence of him doing it. And a lot of Republicans go, I don't see how you can hold him accountable. This is why it's hilarious watching Republicans frantically trying to turn Joe Biden hasn't had a press conference in 50 days. What a grand injustice. Dr. Seuss, Mr. Potato Head, what were his dogs doing? Oh, my God. They're trying desperately to create this. And on the other side, I mean, it's the epitome of saying you need to take the 6-year-old that took a piece of candy, that shoplifted a piece of candy, and take him out back and execute him immediately. Summary judgment, done. But the axe murderer, because he's a Republican, yes, he chopped up 19 people. But come on, I think he feels bad enough. Don't everyone else? Everyone else feel bad? We have to let him go. The problem with our country right now is you have one political party who you can have such outrageous violations of the law, of decency, of humanity, of Christianity, of nobility, of decency. And they just do not care. This guy murdered a man with his car. And he's already, I guarantee you, he has got a fake divorce getting ready. I don't know if he does or not, but my guess would be he's going to get a fake divorce. His wife will take all the money. He'll basically have an apartment with one share in it, and this is all I've got. I don't have anything else, so that the family will never get anything in the civil trial. And then these guys, these Republicans, will laugh and laugh and laugh as they go to church and claim they're Christian. There is no way on the planet anyone who is Christian could look at what happened to George Floyd and not demand some level of justice. It is a sick, broken world out there. Ugh, it is. And how are you going to fix it? I'm not sure. I am not sure how you're going to get this fixed. But it needs to be fixed. 952-946-6205. Let's start off with, you know, since I'm on a roll with the negative, why don't we go with more negative news? Minnesota coronavirus update for today. Minnesota added another 140 COVID-19 deaths to the state's toll on Tuesday, including 138 that were only confirmed after identifying four labs that hadn't been disclosing test results as required. So basically the real number today was two deaths, but because these labs had screwed up, it's 140. Ugh, unbelievable. State health officials on Tuesday said they're investigating why these four labs failed to meet Minnesota requirements for the timely reporting of COVID-19 test results. The discovery of these labs led to the identification of another 37,000 test results, most of which were negative. The missing positive tests were used to verify that some additional deaths over the past 5 months in Minnesota were due to COVID-19, said State Infectious Disease Director Chris Urshaman. We did not have the necessary information for verification until we received those lab reports. The increase of or backlogged infections and deaths brought Minnesota's total in the pandemic to 6,696 COVID-19 deaths, 492,108 diagnosed infections of the coronavirus. Per capita COVID-19 deaths remains lower than most Midwest states, even with the additional of the backlogged cases. Minnesota has 924 labs processing COVID-19 test results compared to 161 labs typically processing seasonal influenza test results. The health commissioner declined to identify the four labs that failed to meet the Minnesota reporting requirements. I think you need to identify them. I think you do. Because of the ongoing investigation that could result in administration fines and penalties. Exactly why the labs fell short in reporting is unclear. Malcolm said a reminder was being sent to all labs this week on the reporting requirements. Discovery of the delinquent labs came in part because of reporting of outbreaks by long-term care facilities that were being matched with comparable test results. The lack of reporting by the four labs did not result in any delay of care of mitigation measures because the long-term care facilities have become aware of the outbreak separately. So there's that, unfortunately, as we, once again, it had been only two. If not for these labs, and once again, these deaths are, all of them are tragic, all of them are sad, but they would not have all been on one day in the past. This would have been spread out. So the reason why the number is so high is that basically it's the accumulated failed results being tacked onto the two additional deaths we had today. Good news, though, is we do have some good news on this. The state of Minnesota is expanding eligibility for the COVID-19 vaccine to the next two groups phasing in starting Wednesday. I'll tell you what, let's take a break. This is a little bit longer story. Let's take a break. Come on back. I'll get into this. Your calls as well, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. As I said, the state of Minnesota is expanding eligibility for the COVID-19 vaccine to the next two groups of phasing starting on Wednesday. This comes as the state is expected to reach its goal of vaccinating 70% of Minnesotans 65 and older this week, which is about 3 weeks ahead of schedule. As of March 6th, 66% of people 65 and older had gotten at least one dose of the vaccine, state data shows. By the way, it was interesting. I was reading a story about Sherburne County, which is actually kind of one of the lowest in vaccination rates. And one of the things the doctor says is, oh, yeah, a big part of this is that these people believe they're believing the conspiracy theories over safety. You can't help those people. You can't help those people. I mean, if you just can't. But, you know, they're just lemmings. That's all they are, is lemmings. We asked most Minnesotans to wait patiently while we protect Minnesotans at higher risk and get shots of at least 70% of our seniors. We will hit that milestone on Wednesday, well ahead of schedule. More Minnesotans will now be eligible to get COVID-19 vaccine beginning this week, said Governor Walz in a statement. To reach 70% of seniors vaccinated is an incredible accomplishment in itself, but it's not the end goal. We will continue moving full steam ahead until every Minnesotan who wants to get a shot gets one. The newly eligible groups, the next two groups phases include about 1.8 million Minnesotans. They are Phase 1B to Tier 2, Minnesotans with specific underlying health conditions such as sickle cell disease, Down syndrome, those in cancer treatment, or immune compromised from organ transplant, oxygen-dependent chronic lung and heart conditions, food processing plant workers, and Minnesotans with rare conditions or disabilities that put them in higher risk for severe illness. Then comes phase 1B Tier 3. These are people 45 to 64 with one or more specific underlying medical conditions, sickle cell disease, Down syndrome, oxygen-depleted chronic lung heart conditions, like those who are active cancer treatment or immune compromised from organ transplant, active cancer, chronic kidney disease, COPD, diabetes, obesity, and pregnancy. People 16 to 44 with two or more specific underlying medical conditions from that same list. People 50 and older who live in multi-generational housing. Now, okay, I'm wondering if I'd qualify now. I'm 52. I'm presuming when they say multi-generational housing, they're talking about my parents, not my kids, but technically my kids being there is multi-generational. I'm going to presume they're talking about seniors. So I will wait because there are people who are more important to get these vaccines than myself. But I think that one needs a little clarification because I saw that. I'm like, oh, do I qualify now? I don't know. Other essential frontline workers, including agricultural, airport staff, additional child care, workers not previously eligible, correctional settings, first responders. How are all the first responders not vaccinated? Yikes. Food production, food retail, grocery and convenience store workers, food service, including bar and restaurant workers, judicial system workers, manufacturing, public health workers, public transit, postal service workers. And I want to just make sure we take a quick moment here. I think it is incredibly important to remember what things were like last March and April when this all came about and there was, and you couldn't find toilet paper anywhere. I was looking at some of the photos I took at grocery stores last year and just, that was weird. That was scary. I'd never seen anything like that before. I mean, well, I'd never seen a situation where everyone had to wear a mask everywhere. But then to go into a grocery store and you'd be down to all the basics. The pasta aisle is gone. The frozen food aisle was depleted. You couldn't find peanut butter for weeks. We sat there and we asked a lot of two very specific groups of people. Grocery store workers, and I'm going to throw in there Target Walmart workers who were there, who, because we needed to still function as a society, that we couldn't just shut everything down and live off the preserves from last year. We needed them to work, as well as also the delivery workers, who frankly, and you know, it is pretty disturbing how badly a lot of those workers get treated on the job. But the reality is that if not for the delivery workers, if not for the retail workers, we would not have gone through those first few months as smoothly. And looking in hindsight, it was relatively smooth as we did. I am highly encouraging those two groups of people get vaccinated next. And it sounds like they are. Grocery workers are going to be able to get in there. So I'm glad that's the case. Although delivery drivers, I didn't see them in there. But my gosh, I mean, I've got a neighbor who's got some health conditions and, you know, the idea of even going to the grocery store was a terrifying nightmare for her. And so thank the people that dropped off groceries for her. She was able to, you know, with their kid and sustain. And we dropped off Thanksgiving. I was very happy we had done that. And Terry John Zeeler, our chef, our local guy that comes on and talks food with us, he had made an apple pie for them. That was very nice. But you see, you gotta thank these people. These people, I mean, remember when all the signs were out? Thank you, first, you know, the people that are working the front lines, thank you. Well, now it's really time to say thank you. Let's get them all vaccinated, okay? Opening up to two groups at once is designed to provide flexibility to providers. However, providers have been directed to prioritize people with specific underlying health conditions. Making sense. That's about 28,000 people. Food processing plant workers, about 44,000 people, because you can't trust the managers of the plant to not try to kill their own employees. Ha, ha, ha. Oh, that's not funny at all, is it? That's kind of scary and terrifying. Yeah. And Minnesotans with rare conditions or disabilities that put them at a high risk of severe illness. Those in group phase 1B tier 2, those in phase 1B tier 3 should wait for their provider, employer, or the state's vaccine connector to let them know when doses are available for them. Get signed up. The state has this sign up area. Just go get signed up and they'll let you know. And you know, and you, I do it through Park Nicollet is the healthcare provider I kind of go through. And so I signed up with Park Nicollet, got the thing taken care of. They're going to let me know when they've got the vaccines, when I'm qualified, when I will be set. And off I go. I'm looking forward to it. But let's make sure we, you know, I'm not a selfish bastard. So basically, let's make sure the people that need these vaccines get them first. How about that? While demand for vaccines still far exceeds supply, shipments for the vaccine from the federal government are increasing, Wall says. That being said, he encourages people to remain patient as everyone who's eligible gets vaccinated. Walls during Tuesday's news conference said it was going to take weeks to get those news groups vaccinated. Based on the current vaccine supply, Malcolm estimates it will take about 10 days to vaccinate the group with underlying conditions and about 2 weeks for food processing and plant workers who will be vaccinated concurrently. Then it will take about 4 to 6 weeks for the vaccine, the larger groups of essential workers in phase 1B, tier 3, and younger people with underlying conditions. So that gets us into April, and I think then the things start getting opened up dramatically after that. So let's fingers crossed, everyone. By summer, maybe. It'd be nice. Let's be careful. Be safe. Wear a mask. Socially distance. Avoid large groups. Wash your freaking hands, okay? Do that, all right? We'll take a break. Come back. Hour two. Patrick Cooligan is going to be joining Brett here in just a moment, right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Hour two rolling on in here. Brett Johnson, kind enough to join us in the studio. Hi, Brett.
Well, hey there, Matt.
In Stearns County, a man was seriously injured after losing control of his homemade go-kart.
How old was this guy?
56. The Stearns County Sheriff's Office received reports of the go-kart crash around 3:21 in the afternoon. So obviously having a – oh, this was on Sunday. It wasn't yesterday. It was on Sunday. So the guy apparently just having his free time. It had happened near the intersection of Main Street and Birch in St. Martin. Stearns County Sheriff's Office, St. Martin Fire and Rescue and Alina Ambulance responded. Upon arrival, residents – respondents located the man, 56, with significant head injuries lying on Main Street. He was complaining of chest and leg pain. He was driving a homemade barstool-style go-kart. And apparently he lost control. Shockingly enough, alcohol is not believed to be a factor in the incident, according to the Stearns County Sheriff's Office. The man was transported to St. Cloud Hospital by Alina Ambulance. At this point, you, I think, want alcohol involved in this, because if not, then you're just really an idiot.
That's too bad you were describing it. I was picturing like in one of those little Shriners things or in the Little Rascals when they're driving the go-karts.
He clearly needs a physics class, because if you take a look at the picture of this, it looks like a lawnmower that they've taken the blade off of and then he just put a chair on top of. And the first thing I'm going to say is, all right, have you factored in weight differential on turns? Well, apparently not.
That works really well if you go straight. Have to turn, there's a little bit of an issue.
Wait, hey, what happened to Cletus over there? A go-kart injury. You're a 56-year-old man, please. And you clearly weren't making it for a kid. Okay, it's not like you can take the barstool go-kart was for my grandkid.
Yeah.
You can't. That was for you. The White House has rehung the official presidential portraits of former Presidents George W. Bush and Bill Clinton after they were removed last July during the Trump administration. CNN had the story. They are back on display in the grand foyer of the executive mansion. The official said the portraits were removed last July and were replaced by two portraits of Republican presidents who served more than a century ago. The White House tradition calls for portraits of the most recent American presidents to be given the most prominent placement in the entrance of the executive mansion, visible to guests during official events. However, the Trump White House removed the Clinton and Bush portraits to what is called the old family dining room, which is basically a small, rarely used room that's not seen by most visitors. It's a storage room. They just chucked W and Bill Clinton into the storage room because Trump, do you want to see them? However, now that they are back in their previous locations, the pictures are most likely to be seen by President Joe Biden as he descends the staircase on the third floor of the private residence. By the way, in case you're wondering, no, he didn't take the official Obama portrait to the wood chipper. The official portrait from former President Obama has not been unveiled, and it is unclear when it will be completed and where it will be hung, but my guess will be in the same location there. So,
we can leave W in storage.
You know, if we're gonna be honest about, you know, protocols and criticize Trump for being Trump, you know, W should be out there too. I mean, it's just, you know, he wasn't thrown out of office. That might be a thing. I mean, he probably should have been, but you know, he was. You know, he wasn't. So, you know, you leave the presence there. But wait a minute here. What would it be when someone takes reality and tries to cancel it?
Oh, this term.
Is Trump was participating in cancel culture?
No.
Oh, yes.
What?
Cancel culture. He tried to cancel Bill Clinton and George W. Bush from existence. Just when you thought a Dr. Seuss book you'd never heard of was a real outrage. And the thing which is good is that it doesn't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat. You both should be kind of bothered by the fact that he did this to them. He canceled culture W and Clinton out of the portraits in the White House because he was such a fragile, feeble little man. That's all he was.
You think he was telling people, hurry up, where's the Obama portrait? Get it in here before I'm out of office. Where is it? Come on, hurry up.
Oh, I think that he would have. I actually think they would have destroyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he would have destroyed it. He would have pulled out a dumpster. He would have lit it on fire, threw it in there, and saying he got what he deserved. And trust me, the same people who would have applauded that, if you know Donald Trump, where do you put his portrait at the White House?
What would his portrait even be? That's the more freaky think about.
Could it be him just giving the thumbs up with a taco bowl? We'll put it down in the food pantry. That's where it is.
It's got to be that one cover photo. I forgot which New York magazine, where it's him sitting in his bedroom with cheeseburgers while watching TVs, if you know that picture.
Getting spanked by Stormy Daniels with a copy of Forbes. No, that's the one.
That it's, too, yeah.
It could be one of the golf portraits. Oh, it's going to be the guy. You know it's going to be the guy that paints those images. Like, he looks like, you know, like a comic book, you know, superhero.
Oh, they're weirder than that.
Oh, he's going, you know that's going to be.
Yeah.
Now, that one will be in the mop bucket office.
Well, if he's so hard up for money, you think maybe McDonald's will sponsor it somehow?
Oh, I don't think McDonald's wants to touch that with a 10-foot pole. Maybe Chick-fil-A, but I doubt it, but. No, God, what would you do with the Trump portrait? He led an insurgency against the Capitol. You don't put him up there. Yeah, we'll give him a place of honor, for goodness sakes. No, you don't do that.
I mean, you don't want to start a precedent of moving presidential portraits that you don't like out of there. But if there was ever a reason to do that, starting an insurrection might be one.
Well, we didn't start the precedent.
That's true.
Donald Trump did. We're just continuing his standard. Which basically means, in I guess the lower sewer area, there's going to be a fine portrait put up on the wall down there of Trump for some reason holding a nuclear weapon in one hand and like in Ivanka in a bathing suit in the other hand, rippled out going, "America, Trump."
Trump fan art is really, really weird.
That is disturbing. Yeah. It is. All right. We are nice to have. We didn't have him here last week. Patrick Cooligan from Minnesota Reformer joins you again today, right?
Indeed, he did. Yeah, we'll be talking today about a little bit of a botched gubernatorial run announcement from former state senator Scott Jensen. He is set to announce he's running for governor next week, but didn't really mean to announce that it was happening today. We'll touch on that and a little bit on what's happening in Minneapolis with the Chauvin trial. So that's what's on tap with Patrick.
All right. Here we go. It's Brett Johnson and Patrick Cooligan from the Minnesota Reformer right here on AM 950.
Brett Johnson with Patrick Coolican here on our usual Tuesday visit on the Matt McNeil Show, as we visit with Patrick every week from the Minnesota Reformer, talking about the latest in Minnesota political news, as we welcome Patrick back to the show. Hey, Patrick, how's it going today?
Always good to be here.
Yeah, good to have you back on again. You can find Patrick and the other writers' work over at MinnesotaReformer.com. Of course, one of the big stories that's happening this week is the beginning of the Derek Chauvin trial. And one of your writers, Dina Winter, wrote an interesting piece this week talking about what's been happening with police reform efforts in Minneapolis amid the trial of Derek Chauvin, which is starting up right now. And she talked about largely how nothing that significant has necessarily happened in the city of Minneapolis, and had a chance to speak with a number of members of the city council. And Patrick, it sounds like, at least speaking to a few members of the council, they still don't really have a firm direction in terms of what direction they want to go on reforming the police department, correct?
Right. I think Dina was interested to see, now that this is an important marker as the Chauvin's trial starts, progress has the city made as it tries to reform its police department and change its entire policing policies. And I think what we have found is that, I mean, the city has really been a bit dysfunctional with a lot of infighting amongst the council members themselves, between the council and the mayor. The police department, there's quite a bit of conflict with the city council and then with the police administration and the union. So it's been just difficult to get a clear direction. And as a result, there's not been a whole lot of progress. They will tell you that the city council members say you have to be patient. They're going to try to get this charter amendment onto the ballot in November so that Minneapolis voters can have a chance to create essentially a whole new police department or a public safety agency, and to really change how policing is done in Minneapolis. But as for now, not much has happened, especially if you consider what's happened in some other cities, New York, Portland, Oregon, Austin, Texas. They've really made sweeping changes and really especially moved a lot of money out of police and into other services that they think would be better performed by other city employees than by police officers. Thus far, we've seen some nibbling around the edges. The mayor and the police chief have rolled out some reforms. Some of those are in response to the State Department of Human Rights, which has required them in a consent decree with the city. But for the most part, not a whole lot has changed. And, you know, I'm sure it's very frustrating for residents of the city.
Yeah, and something interesting that Dina pointed out in her piece was talking about how there are a number of these cities, as you mentioned, around the country that have made some pretty significant reforms to their police departments, with Portland, Oregon, voting, what do you say, I think $15 million from their police force. You have the Austin, Texas City Council cutting its police budget, and then you have New York City shifting about $1 billion from their $6 billion police department budget. And Minneapolis, yeah, no significant actions as of yet, and I think a big reason why this is happening, at least gathering from Dina's reporting, is that there's not only a divide, I think, between the city council and Mayor Jacob Frey, who do have different views on what to do with the police department, but it even sounds like, well, there's still a few members with the city council that are largely siding with Frey on the issue, where they don't want to go quite as far as some of the other city council members go. So, yeah, there's definitely still a divide in Minneapolis among the elected officials on what exactly we want to do with police in the city.
Right. I mean, it shows how contentious the issue is, because remember, these are all, I mean, kind of, it seems obvious, but that these are all Democrats. They're all progressive Democrats, but they can't really figure out a path forward. And all of this is complicated by the fact that you've had last year a 21% increase in violent crime, especially a lot of really kind of high profile carjackings and such. shootings, and then you've had a loss of about 200 officers to retirements, resignations, and disability claims. And so I think there's residents who are, especially if you live in certain neighborhoods, they're very skeptical of any plan to transform the police, especially if you're talking about cutting police officers without having what seems like a really solid plan in place once you make this change. And so I think that's created a lot of political pressure as well on some of the council members where, you know, in their wards, people are saying, well, you know, what's the plan here? So, yeah, it's a difficult political situation, and we'll just have to see where it goes.
Well, speaking of another political situation that has to do with the Derek Chauvin trial, that would be security funding needed for the city of Minneapolis in anticipation of possible protests that could be happening in the coming weeks. Of course, there was a major disagreement between state Republicans and Democrats over how much money should be given to Minneapolis, or in some cases, if any money should be given to Minneapolis. And we do at least have somewhat of a compromise, I guess you might call it, at least in the state Senate, where they did pass $20 million in security funding, where you had the entire GOP caucus along with DFL Senate leader Susan Kent voting for the package. So are making some progress, at least on the Senate side, but it will be interesting to see what happens because this, of course, has to pass the House as well. And I'm sure there's some provisions in this bill that DFL members in the House are not exactly happy with. But we did at least get $20 million thus far passed in the state Senate.
Yeah, but I think that's really, it's just another negotiating ploy. There's no chance that would pass the House. And so I think the Senate Republicans, the Republicans who control that upper chamber, they want to show that they're taking action. But it's I think they're still pretty far away from any kind of agreement. So we'll have to see what happens. But the House Democrats, they want some more accountability measures in there because they want to rein in police agencies who are dealing with large assemblies after having seen what happened last summer after George Floyd's killing, where demonstrators and journalists were targeted, they allege, and in many cases severely injured by various law enforcement agencies. The Senate bill also puts the money with essentially trade associations, the sheriffs and police officers associations, which is a little bit, they're deciding how the money's going to be spent, which I think is kind of odd. And the original Governor Tim Walz's idea was that this would be controlled by the Commissioner of Public Safety, which seems to make more sense. So I think that's another issue that's going to be a sticking point.
Yeah, that just seems like a lot of extra red tape to go around when it comes to trying to get that money if it's going to be held up by some of these different groups that you were talking about in this bill. The other interesting part I found in here, maybe interesting is not quite the right way to put it, but they also changed the definition of what a disaster is for the purpose of determining eligibility for state assistance. We're currently under state law. The definition of disaster includes any fire, flood, or explosion, regardless of the cause, and this bill would exclude catastrophes caused by civil disobedience from the definition of disaster. So, no, there's some real wonky language in there, but again, that's probably another part of the bill that House DFLers are not exactly going to be happy with once that works its way over to the other side.
They're clearly targeting Minneapolis here because it's good politics to slag on Minneapolis or the Twin Cities broadly, or the metro even broader, in Republican politics, which has become so geographically isolated. And, you know, I wrote a column about this last week. You know, one of the hallmarks of Minnesota politics in my brief experience, and I've only been here 6 years, is that when there's a disaster someplace and people are have bad things happen to them through no fault of their own, or it's a tornado, fire, what have you, we take care of them. And these business owners, and even the infrastructure in Minneapolis. I mean, the people who live there and rely on that infrastructure, but also the business owners, they did not have no responsibility in the fact that their stores got looted and burned, or that some, if you're a resident of Minneapolis, that some infrastructure you rely on got ruined. And so to me, this is a sharp break from the Minnesota's tradition of taking care of people. And I find it baffling and a little outrageous.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you, especially being that when we've had previous disasters in the past that have taken place outside of Minneapolis, well, we're pretty quick at getting those cities emergency funding, whether it's natural disasters or other causes. Speaking with Patrick Koulikan, he is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Website is minnesotareformer.com. Want to talk about another thing that Ricardo Lopez, one of your writers, broke today, and that has to do with State Senator Scott Jensen. He is a Republican from Chaska, or at least was a Republican from Chaska, is set to announce that he is going to be running for governor next week, which is a significant development, being that he is one of the bigger names that was expected to possibly run for governor coming up in 2022. Jensen, of course, does have a history of being a doctor and also some bipartisan progress on gun reform bills. But the doctor background is really interesting, Patrick, because he really, for lack of a better way of putting it, went down the conspiracy theory rabbit hole in regards to COVID, talking about how cases are being overreported. And to me, I find that really interesting in terms of how he tries to sell that background as being a doctor coming up in 2022, if for the most part he was peddling conspiracy theories during the pandemic.
Yeah, he really rose to some national prominence by appearing on Fox News and specifically Laura Ingraham. And by touting these ideas that the threat of COVID was overblown, and that even they were that healthcare providers were exaggerating at the behest of the State Department of Health and the CDC, they were exaggerating COVID deaths in order to get more money from the federal government. It's a dubious claim. It's been shot down quite a bit. He also once referred to the as COVID-19 as a mild 4-day respiratory illness. And that was in, I think, April of last year. I mean, so it was, by that point, it was pretty clear that it was more, for some people, it was a mild 4-day respiratory illness, but for other people, it was, could kill them or hospitalize them. And now, of course, 500,000 Americans have died. So he brings this credibility to the table as somebody who went to med school and is a doctor, but he's a family doctor, not an epidemiologist, not a virologist. And I think some of these theories of his are going to be thrown back at him. I also don't think that this issue is going to be all that salient in the fall of 2022. I mean, we're all going to be vaccinated. We're all going to be back to somewhat normal. There's obviously going to be reverberation and long-term effects, but I don't think it's going to be part of the daily conversation. And the economy is probably going to be recovering. So, but you go with what you got. What's also interesting about the way he announced his candidacy, there's two things. One is he never says that he's a Republican.
Right.
So that's created some speculation that maybe he's open to a kind of third party run, running as an independent. But also he sent out his release. He emailed out this release to everybody, though not the Reformer, but to a lot of people. And then he asked for what's called an embargo. And what that is you're asking media organizations to not report on what you're sending them until a given date and time. And he put the embargo date as March 16th. Well, I mean, some journalists are discreet, but that's an awful long time to ask journalists to sit on news. And also, you really should ask them if they're willing to abide by it before you send it to them. Well, anyway, this wound up in our hands. And so, obviously, we were not bound by any agreement with him, so we reported it. And this is just not the way you want to roll out your announcement run for governor, is by having the, especially as a Republican, by having the Minnesota Reformer report it.
Yeah, I'm sure he was thrilled that you guys were one of the first, if not the first, to be reported.
We were first.
You were the first on that. I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into this, but maybe he did it on purpose to somehow get this slowly matriculating its way into the media cycle that, oh, Scott Jensen is running for governor. But then again, as you said, that's not usually the way that this works in terms of when you send an embargo out to a media organization. Yeah, so probably just some mismanagement on his part.
Occam's razor would dictate that this was just a flub. But, you know, it's kind of a nothing, you know, but this early stage of the campaign that I call the pre-campaign is what you're trying to do is impress elites, impress the political junkies, the people pay close attention because that's how you attract political talent and money and impress journalists who might write a fluffy puff piece about you before things get tough. So this part of the campaign is important, and these kinds of mistakes do stand out. I think we're all familiar with the stories of campaigns that just rolled out very badly right out of the gate, and they never recovered.
Now, you also did point out just one more thing here on Scott Jensen, that he did not list himself as specifically seeking the Republican Party endorsement or nomination, and doesn't even mention that he belongs to the Republican Party. And I don't know if that's perhaps speculation that he could run as a third party, or maybe he's just trying to hide the identity that he is a Republican, looking at the tea leaves and realizing that, well, the GOP hasn't won a statewide race since 2006. And then you also have that gun issue, which could come back to bite him, being that, well, prior to the pandemic, he was open to some gun reform proposals. So maybe, again, there's some real three-dimensional chess that he's possibly playing right here by not listing himself as a Republican. I don't know. I would just find it hard to believe that he would run as a third party. But even if he tries to present himself as being that very moderate sort of Republican, but not actually am, even though I am a Republican, I know, complicated saying it there, that just in terms of how he's positioning himself right now, I don't know if that would be realistic in a primary, especially being that we're probably going to have a very Trumpian Republican base in 22.
You would think Tim Pawlenty tried to run in the primary only, and he got
that's a great example. What I was kind of thinking of it.
Mm-hmm. So but maybe he thinks that there's no way to win the endorsement, and so he's just going to start running for the primary right now, and maybe he has some Trumpian bona fides because he appears on Laura Ingraham and spouts some, as you say, peddles some COVID conspiracy theories. And so maybe that builds up his credibility with that crowd. And then he's able to kind of escape the gun issue. So I don't know. I mean, it's, they haven't won a statewide race in 15 years, and they need to, and I'll be writing a column about this week as well. I mean, they need to start blurring the lines between themselves and the DFL on issues where it makes sense, and not creating a huge contrast, because there's more Democrats in the state than Republicans, and they just keep losing. So, he may be onto something there, but the problem is, like, how do you get out of the Republican primary? And or if you're ever going to run as an independent, I mean, how do you, you got to get on one of those tickets, and or getting on the ballot is not necessarily easy.
Well, we'll have to look forward to that piece that, you're going to be writing in the next few days on that very top. We'll have to check that out over at MinnesotaReformer.com. Hey, that's been Patrick Coulican. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, joining us for our usual Tuesday visit. Hey, Patrick, thanks again, as always, for the time today.
Always a pleasure.
All right, we'll take a break and turn things back over to Matt McNeil up next.
I don't know what quite to think about Jensen, if you want to know the truth. Got to remember, and first of all, I mean, considering all of his anti-coronavirus conspiracy theory crap, you derail this guy's campaign pretty easily by just bringing in someone saying, my grandmother died of coronavirus. Are you saying she was a fake, that she didn't really die of coronavirus? Have them hold up the death certificate and a picture of grandma and have them go, hamina, 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 hamina. And of course, the minute all of a sudden he has to go, well, I'm not saying everyone who died of coronavirus. I'm just saying they grossly inflated the numbers. Well, you're kind of, it's easy to do that when you're doing it generically. But is my grandmother one of the inflated numbers? And all of a sudden he has to admit, I don't know. And because that's the only thing he can admit, because he can't admit, oh, yeah, well, no, your grandmother was, you know, clearly died of coronavirus. But I'm talking about other people. You can't really necessarily do that. So you can easily derail Jensen's campaign. That's for sure. And I also will mention here, Bluestem Prairie actually, with the help from Bring Me the News, bring up the point that in October, the world pharma companies were engaged in the final trials for the COVID-19 vaccines. Jensen appeared alongside notable anti-vaxxers such as Andrew Wakefield and Sheila Ely at the 2020 vaccine awareness event held in Alexandria, as reported by Bluestem Prairie. So, you know, he's part of the anti... What kind of doctor are you that you are part of the anti-vaxxer movement? And by the way, and I just want to... Let me give you a little bit of a warning to the vast majority of people who are going to try to pander to this fringe group as a way to springboard your campaign. Most people think the anti-vaxxers are nuts, all right? I'm included. I think that they're absolutely crazy because it's clear vaccinations have helped us as a society. And don't get me wrong, and I've said this, I've written about this, I understand that when with people who have family members that are dealing with other health issues, you want to find some sort of smoking gun cause. But the reality is making one up out of thin air is not your answer. And so I don't know how, if he thinks that that's going to necessarily, as a doctor, you know, is he telling people as a doctor, don't get vaccinated, which is another thing that could derail his campaign pretty quickly. But I'll never forget about Jensen is this. Jensen was the guy. I mean, the insulin bill, the insulin bill, that was his baby. And the Republican Party, well, and I don't think it was initially a negotiation ploy to try to get something else. I honestly feel as if the Republican Party was bought off by the pharmaceutical industry to kill that bill. And so he had to vote against his own bill. And it wasn't long after that he announced he wasn't running for Senate anymore. So when Brett Johnson asked the question, is that, will he run as the third party? I don't know. That's actually a legit question because I don't know how happy he is that what was going to be his signature accomplishment as a senator, the insulin bill, got derailed because it was more important to appease Big Pharma than it was to actually save human lives. But then on top of it, you also have him embracing this extremist far-right loon ball cult-like mentality about coronavirus and vaccines. I don't know. Maybe he'll run as a third party on the far right. Maybe he'll run as a third party in the middle. But needless to say, I would also agree with something that was brought up with the Kulikin interview. There's no way in the world with his record and his comments he said about guns he's ever going to win the Republican nomination. I don't think that that's, I mean, these people, like I said, the Trump supporters, the most red meat, far right loon balls, they're the ones who will pick the Republican nominee. So we'll have to see where that goes. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. Get caught back up. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. You also have to admit it is pretty amazingly foolish that his campaign thought they could send out a press release and embargo it without having agreements from the media. Yeah, I'm sure every Republican in the state is just delighted that the Minnesota Reformer is the one that broke that story. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I want to, as well, there was another story that broke today that I wanted to make sure that we talk about, and that is that it actually broke last night, if I remember correctly. And it involves the Trump basically turning on the Republican Party and saying, don't send your money to them. Send your money directly to me. Now, Jeff Stein, and we'll have Jeff on tomorrow again. Jeff Stein has always said from the get-go that Trump was not a Republican, that Trump became a Republican because it gave him the opportunity to become the president. But the reality is that he's not necessarily, he doesn't have any loyalty to that party. And in the last few days, there has been some very interesting movement. And I was actually having the discussion with someone else about this. So you have in the days before he left office, after the coup, as the impeachment was heating up, that the talk of impeaching him was heating up, Trump was referring to the fact that he was going to go start a third party, which immediately freaked out every Republican. And so almost instantaneously, the Republican Party started downplaying what happened on the 6th. They started saying that the criticism that was fairly leveled at Trump's feet during the day after the raid on the 6th, that the criticism that was laid at Trump's feet was that they didn't really mean it, that he's a misunderstood rapscallion, that this was Antifa, this wasn't really this. And they downplayed it and basically said that if you don't go and carry Trump's water, that basically the party doesn't have any time for you. Which then immediately, and if you did see this, I mean, it immediately created this fairly substantial divide within the Republican Party, where all of a sudden the moderates, and it's hard to believe that there are still moderates in there, but there are moderates, and a lot of them live in the suburbs. And I brought up a point yesterday. Jennifer DeJarnette, who is a Republican activist, runs with Three Rivers Park System. She basically posted that, you can't win with this kind of circus-like far-right, exploitive Republicans in the cities. You can't. The suburbs generally don't like that. And so you're not going to win statewide races unless you get a good chunk. You not only have to get the tertiary suburbs, you need to get some of the secondary and even the first tier suburbs if you're going to have a chance at winning statewide races. And so you had all of a sudden this vilification of moderate Republicans as rhinos. You had Liz Cheney. Liz Cheney was ordered, she ignored the order, but she was ordered by the Wyoming Republican Party to resign her position. You had censure votes on many of the Republicans who voted to impeach Trump. So you have this really interesting dynamic here and where they want to go. And Trump himself, you got to understand, from Trump's point of view, he's not going to run again in 2024. He's not going to run again in 2024. Because there's no way in the world. Well, first of all, I don't think he'd win, and I think he even knows he would not win. And I think that the further we get away from his first term and the more crap that we find out about or reminded about, my God, some of the things we've forgotten about that, I mean, we're kind of getting reminded of now. I think it's not going to help his legacy. Plus that he's going to have so many damn lawsuits against him. I still think there's a very decent chance by the end of this year he is not living in the United States. He is living in Russia or in Saudi Arabia, but needless to say, not here in the United States. And he will live out his days in a foreign country and, throwing lobs back at the Democrats or the Republicans or whoever it is. But he's realizing that he needs to figure out some way to make money here because he doesn't have a lot of use anymore for Russian oligarchs. So they're not going to bankroll him. Plus the fact that I don't think you're going to be able to find a legitimate bank anymore. Let me give you one step back. If the first bank of Uzbekistan is funding your major construction project in New York, that's going to raise a lot of red flags. Deutsche Bank, who has been funding a lot of his projects, they're basically running away from him now. No other legitimate bank's going to touch him. So he needs money. So he initially says that if you want to use Trump's name, that you have to pay me copyright trademark. And very quickly, the Republican Party, this was like on Sunday night to Monday. Very quickly, the Republican Party came on back and they said, no, we're not going to do that. But then Trump comes on out and says, don't send your money to the GOP. Send your money directly to me. Now, Democrats, DFL, listen to me a quick sec, okay? It's pretty clear the Republican Party ran fake pro-marijuana candidates in multiple races that led to basically the situation we're in right now, that the Senate is in the hands of the Republicans because of these fake candidates, that there are a few the House got closer because of some of these fake candidates. When it comes to what is above board strategy, you have to start playing their game. If I were the Democratic Party, I would be running ads in every major small town newspaper throughout the entire state of Minnesota, and I'd be running ads on all these conservative radio stations in rural Minnesota that are saying, hey, send your money to Trump, and here's the address. Because if the Republican Party in Minnesota, and nationally for that most part as well, if the Republican Party takes a massive hit to their finances because all the money is going to Trump, it's going to create a mess. And eventually as well, what you also create is this friction where the party itself is going to eventually have to come on out and condemn this as you know, I can't believe you're doing this. I can't believe Trump is doing this. Trump has betrayed the Republican Party, and boy, then watch the Republican Party blow up. Holy God, that would be fantastic. So yeah, I don't have any problem listening to the Republicans hearing this, because all it takes is just all, you know, hi, you know, run an ad, donate your money. If you want to make donations, don't give your money to the Republicans, give it to Donald Trump directly. Here's his number. What's wrong with that ad? And all of a sudden, checks will start flowing to Donald Trump. And that's a check. Every check that gets sent to Donald Trump is a check that doesn't go to the local Republican Party. And that money will not help these candidates. I mean, you pick your rural Minnesota House member in the 2022 elections, or the House member or senator in 2022 or 2024. Tell me, who's going? Is Donald Trump going to sit down at Mar-a-Lago and go, who's that guy that's running up in 16A in Minnesota? Let's make sure he gets some of the money. No, he's going to pocket it. That money stays with him. So if you did this, and all you're doing is you're only vocalizing what Donald Trump himself has said. That's not dirty tricks. That's just basically taking his side in an inbred fight over at the Republican Party. I'll go with Cletus 1 instead of Cletus 2. So if you're the DFL, if you're the Democrats, I would highly recommend you get out there and start spending some money in these, and they're cheap. Gosh, you can run a big ad in those newspapers really, real cheaply. And many of them are owned by large groups. You can get a buy discount and a quarter page ad in all these papers. They'll give you a good price on that. Go run that ad. Go spend the money in these small towns, on especially the conservative stations, and say, send your donation straight to Trump. The Republican Party can't be trusted. And then watch. Oh, you guys have to have the guts to fight back. And we're not even, I'm not talking about running fake third party candidates, although you probably could be running those. I'm just going to just say, if you started running fake moderate Republican candidates, or, you know, fake far right candidates, you'd probably do some damage. Just saying. But this is not nefarious in this. You're just basically making sure you're echoing the point of Donald Trump. If you're not willing to fight back and punch back, well, then you're just allowing the bully to win. You got to punch back. And that's a pretty good right hook. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Sounds like a third juror has been seated. We'll get an update on that when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Native Roots Radio, I am awake, coming up here in the 6 o'clock hour. Stay with us throughout the evening, especially now that it stays lighter longer. It will remind you, we got daylight savings time coming up this weekend, too. We jump ahead. You spring ahead. And so you're going to get a lot more light in the evening here. It's going to get dark in the morning again. But, you know, it's going to feel nice because we're going to start picking up those hours of sunlight here before too much longer. So this update here, the third juror here, the day's final prospective juror, a man who works as an auditor, was chosen for the jury after expressing confidence that he could be fair. He said he saw at least portions of the oft-referenced video and had a somewhat negative view of Chauvin because someone died, and that's obviously not a positive thing. At the same time, the man continued, he said he can examine the evidence from a viewpoint of the law before deciding whether or not the defendant is guilty. So there you go. Three people have now been seated. I don't know. There are signs. You know, I don't know how you'll, and we talked about this yesterday with Jack Rice, and you can go listen to that interview. We did spotlight that one. There are elements of this which, you know, how are you going to find jurors that are really going to be that obtuse to what happened? And, I mean, you're eventually just going to have jurors that had seen the video and are going to get shown the video. And even if they haven't seen the video, they're going to get shown the video. It really is disappointing that this is, you know, that we are actually discussing, considering what we have. And it's just the latest in evidence we have of a police officer who clearly did something wrong. But our society has said that police officers can never be held accountable. Or if they're held accountable, the worst you can do is give them a slap on the wrist. I think one of the things, if the Democrats ever get full control of the state, you got to get rid of the qualified immunity. You have to get rid of qualified immunity. You cannot allow bad actions to go unpunished. And right now, I mean, and you take a look, and Kulikin was talking about it in his story, his interview there, that, you know, the Republicans, not only are they're basically saying, we'll give you $20 million, which is still less than they offered, but they're not going to give it to anything that is related to any kind of protest, that it can only be used for police officers, and that these police agencies are going to be the ones that are responsible for distributing the money, not the city of Minneapolis. Well, that's not going to fly. Because you have Republicans who, once again, they would rather be with a man who murdered a black man on camera and seemed to be snuggling up to that side than actually doing what is right for the people. One final thing. This is brought to you out of the Irish Times, you know, and this goes back to our discussion we had earlier about the monarchy in Britain. Because once again, the thing that really is going to make them maddest about the Harry Meghan interview is that it brings them down to the level of just us. And this is just brilliant because and the Irish, of course, is as good as they ever get. Having a monarchy next door is a little like having a neighbor who's really into clowns and has daubed their house in clown murals, displays clown dolls in each window, has an insatiable desire to hear more and discuss about clown-related news stories. More specifically for the Irish, it's like having a neighbor who really into clowns, also a grandfather who was murdered by a clown. Well done. Native Roots Radio up next. Have a good one. Until tomorrow, see ya.